Then I recognized
Carson.
I may have missed what you have said, Mr. Van Vroeger.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. At this stage, I have no further questions for Mr. Carso. It might be that after questions of clarity, there are issues that I need to address with Mr. Carso.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable members, Mr. Van Vroeger has completed reading the evidence, is there any member that need to examine the evidence that has been provided to us by the witness in the box, even if it's not in the box, but maybe we should continue with examining the evidence as presented to us, and any question, of course, it would have to be asked through the chairperson to the witness. Thank you very much. I recognize Honorable Lotrit, then Honorable Filtane for now. You may proceed, Honorable Lotrit.
Thank you, Chair. Through you to Mr. Carter. Sir, on a point of order, when a point of order is called, does the Speaker have a right to refuse a point of order?
Mr. Carter?
I thought the member would ask a round of questions, but I can answer if you want me to.
I think if we could respond to that, it will assist the others from asking a similar question.
Mr. Chair, the rule says, Rule 72, a member may not speak unless recognized by the Chair. Secondly, to raise a point of order. And generally, the approach is for the Speaker to take points of order when they are raised. It does happen, as I read yesterday in the Guide to Procedure, that where Speaker has ruled on a matter, presiding officer has ruled on a matter, and it is their determination that the point of order that is going to be raised may be the same point of order that Speaker would refuse to take a point of order. And that is what I was attempting to do when I read the Guide to Procedure. Because there are various interventions that name points of order sometimes. So the Speaker has the responsibility to weigh whether it's a point of order or not a point of order. So when the Speaker has ruled on a matter, it has happened that the Speaker would not, the presiding officer would not take further points on the issue.
The Honorable Filtane.
Thanks for the opportunity, Chair. In the video clips that were shown today, I want to describe myself that the House will understand what I'm talking about. I may not have the exact minutes. But where we saw two ministers talking to inside the House during the adjournment or something, as well as during that same break, where leaders of parties, if I can use that generic term, you know, there could have been chief whips and so on. Does Mr. Carson know in detail what was discussed by those parties? Or third incident, he
is when the sergeant at arms appears to be talking to Messrs. The Honorable Malema and Shivambo. Okay, those three instances. Does he know what was discussed at that time? Does he have first-hand or recorded information of what was discussed, you know, at those times? I think I will limit myself to that.
Mr. Kazu.
Mr. Chair, I don't know what was discussed in those interactions. And I take it that you're talking about the engagements that were happening on the floor of the chamber at that time. Leaders of parties, no, I don't know what was discussed.
Okay, Honorable Dagal.
Chair, I'm not posing a question, but I'm trying to have a clarity in my mind. I understood that this time is open for us for clarity-seeking questions. And because the lead evidence has been presented to us, what we have to raise clarity-seeking questions. And then sometimes not question about perceptions in other areas. I thought that's how I thought you are trying to do now, to pose those questions that clarify some of the issues that were raised by Mr. Tasso, in order for us to have a clear picture. When we take a final decision, we have clarity in our mind about some of the issues that was given in terms of leading the evidence.
Okay. Thanks for that specific intervention. I think I recognize the Honorable Lotrit who wanted to come back, and then we will have Honorable Mwango after Lotrit, then Killian will come in, and Masoko will come in that order. Honorable Lotrit.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I do want to come back to the point, but I first want to have absolute clarity now in terms of what we are allowed to do now. Is it only points of clarity? At what point will we then be able to engage with the witness in terms of his evidence?
Mr. Klaus. Can you repeat that if you want me to respond to you?
Chairperson, I do have a question for Mr. Kasu, but I would like to have absolute clarity now. At this point of the proceedings, are we only allowed to ask questions of clarity? And if that is so, at what point will we be allowed to engage with a witness in terms of the evidence that was led? Thank you.
So, Honorable Boyd.
Chair, with your indulgence, can we really ask for some time to go and all of us to go and consult and solicit the legal opinion of how to handle this matter now from here? You see, so that it can give us proper guidance, so that we don't put the witness or ourselves in a very compromising position. We just want to ask for 5 minutes and ask all members to go and consult with the legal representative.
There's a proposal that you get the legal advisors and ensure that you are on the same page, all of you, just within 5 minutes and reconvene. It looks like Honorable Matoko need to make a comment.
We are dealing with a statement of a witness here. The witness who presented before this committee. Now we are here to engage with what he has said to this forum.
I don't see any need for a legal advice.
There is a point of order from Honorable Boy. Can we hear that?
Chair, we are just saying, we're not stopping anybody to start indicting, but we are saying that we're asking that all of us as a team in the committee to go and talk to ourselves that how do we handle the process from here. That's all we're asking for. We're not asking anything differently from, not saying that we're not, we have to agree that we're going to solicit clarities, but already we can have a sense that it's not just going to be clarities. And we just wanted to solicit some guidance of how we should be handling the matter from here. That's all we ask. So that we can all be singing from the same page.
Okay. I think, as I understand that, Honorable Matok, what you say you want to do is not actually rebutted that it cannot be done, but it's just simply a process matter and to really sing from the same page, all of yourself. Because, of course, is that initially I think you agree that when the evidence has been left, then we will definitely have an opportunity to ask questions for clarity. And I think that is what was agreed. And then, but now there is an opportunity where then we want to really engage with the evidence and go beyond the clarity of questions. Then we have got a proposal that you get advised by the legal people whether you can actually go that beyond that particular point, so that when you come here, then you continue. Then you continue from the same page.
No, Chairperson, what I wanted to, it was just my leading statement.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to emphasize is that we are in a hearing here. This hearing is of public interest, and if there are issues pertaining to this hearing, they must be recorded and presented in this forum. You know, that forum of going out there to discuss is illegal forum because it's a caucus. It must be presented in this meeting, in this forum.
The point of order is being raised, Honorable Boy.
Honorable Chair, now the honorable member is now moving more further. He's now beginning even to question what we have all agreed is how we're going to handle ourselves since we started the process. Now he's beginning to say that forum as if he's dismissing the fact that we have to meet as members of parliament and have changed in how we handle the process. And this has been an agreement that we've been taking upon and amongst ourselves. So he's now beginning to be dismissive, and I don't understand. Nobody has said that no party doesn't want to know what is going on. But we're just saying that as members of parliament that has been mandated by parliament can we meet and have a meeting just to handle out the process.
Honorable Fultay.
Thank you, sir. If by going out at this point in time to meet in camera, we understand that we'll be making a statement to the public to say that we never clarified the terms that would guide this process, I support that we go out. As long as the public will understand that we're making a statement to say we never agreed on how we're going to end this process, I'll support it. Thank you. So it's a technical support. Thank you.
Okay.
Maybe we shouldn't make it a big issue. Just in the morning when we met, we have a discussion on this issue. I think she allowed the honorable members to pose questions. Allow them share to pose questions. I want to persuade Honorable Boy that we withdraw our proposal for a break. Let us have a discussion, allow them to pose questions, every member that wants to pose questions. I think she let us do that. I think the witness is here. And then the initiator is here, ourselves, we are here. Let us allow that to come and share. Let us not make a big issue out of it.
Is that agreed? Agreed, then let's proceed. Honorable Lodrid.
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you, Mr. Kasu, you've now said that you refer to the rule in terms of taking a point of order. and I ask you whether a speaker has a right to refuse a point of order, and you also then said, but the speaker can determine whether a point of order is valid or not. But can a speaker, for example, say, a member says, speaker on a point of order, and before the point of order is heard, can the speaker say, I don't acknowledge you?
Mr. Kosh.
Mr. Chair, ultimately the decision is that of the speaker. The rule says a member may speak when called upon to do so by the presiding officer or to a point of order. And I just need to read, because what I say here has to be based on something. What page 165, where it says, when a point of order is taken, the presiding officer is obliged to respond by giving a ruling or a decision. If it is ruled that a point of order is valid, he or she will take appropriate corrective action. If the response is that the member speaking may continue, the presiding officer is in effect dismissing the point of order. The presiding officer may give a ruling immediately. Then I read yesterday on page 164, members should not raise spurious points of order to disrupt the member speaking or in an attempt to respond to the member speaking. The chair will regard this as an abuse of the rules of procedure, and this practice lays a member open to not being recognized by the chair. So in the end, the determination is that of the speaker. I'm saying, Mr. Chairperson, it is generally the case that when a member rises on a point of order, the presiding officer recognizes the member. But there have been instances where it would appear that the presiding officer has made a determination that either the presiding officer has already ruled on the matter that is likely to be raised by the member, and the presiding officer then responds. But as I say, ultimately the decision is that of the presiding officer, but the presiding officers generally take points of order.
Honorable Nwangu.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually was interested in getting some clarity on the statement which was actually made by the speaker, insofar as wanting to understand correctly what she meant when she called on the sergeant at arms to remove members that are not serious. What actually, in your own understanding, actually that meant, member not serious.
Honourable Chair, I like the point that the Honourable Member raises, the last bit of his statement, in my own understanding. I just wanted to contextualize what was happening there. There had been about, I'll just count the members that I can remember now. There had been Honourable Ramakata, who raised a point of order, and Speaker gave a ruling. When I say gave a ruling, the speaker said that is not a valid point of order. And then there was the Honorable Richard Chabalala. And the speaker says, Honorable Member, take your seat. Then there was Honorable Garty, who also rose, and the speaker said, Honorable Member, take your seat. And I can't remember if there was another member. Then the Honorable Rosie. All I can say, Mr. Chair, it would appear that at that point, because you would know that earlier that speaker had recognized Mr. Olomisa, and it would appear because speaker did not take Honorable Lozzi's point of order. So I don't know what the meaning of the word, what the meaning of the statement was, except that the events that led to that were of members were rising, making interventions, and speaker ruling on those, please be seated, please be seated, please be seated. I can only think that speaker, that's my understanding, was addressing the situation that was unfolding in the house, because at that point it was Mr. Dlozi standing and wanting to raise a point of order, and then speaker makes the statement. That is all I can see in the Hansard, and that's all I can view in the DVD. But as I say, I would not know what in effect members were not serious would have meant. But at that point, there was a series of members who had been called to order by the speaker, and they were standing to make interventions.
Honorable Killian.
If I may make a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
I'll come back to you. Honorable Killian.
Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to just come back and through you to the witness, if you could perhaps just go a little further with the issue of points of order and what is meant through the rules. And I specifically want to refer to page 164 of the guide to practice. If you could first, to procedure, if you could first just explain the origin of this, and secondly, the practice that has developed, and how these rules become part of a convention of Parliament. If we read on page 164, there is a very clear distinction between points of order or procedure, which must be based on the rules, and disputes of fact. And if you could perhaps just elaborate on that matter as it relates to parliamentary procedure. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Kass, I just hope that you may be having your book referred to. And if so, then can you respond? Can you switch off the mic,
Mr. Chairman, the book says points of order must relate to a point of procedure. It must be to do with the rules, procedure or order of the House. And of course, there's the explanation here that a valid point of order restricts a member's right not to be interrupted. In other words, a point of order should not be used in terms of this to interrupt members and in terms of practice. And accordingly, such an interruption is only allowed if it calls attention to a point of order or a point of privilege. In other words, it must relate to practice. Elsewhere here, it is stated that points of order should not be about responding to a statement by a member, to the content of a statement by a member, or as an opportunity. I was just trying to find a reference in Erskine May where it says that if it's during question time, points of order should also not be used as an extension of question opportunities for members, as I say, Honorable Chair. Hopefully I will find it later. So points of order should strictly be used to rise on points of procedure, not to dispute facts, not to make speeches, because the disputing of facts, there would be an opportunity for that. If there was a debate, there would be an opportunity in the debate for a member or a member who holds similar views to raise the point that the member wanted to raise, or other opportunities in the House to raise issues that deal with facts. But points of order, as it suggests, is about order. It's about procedure in the House or in a meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Honorable Mathieu.
Mr. Nkasa, experience as you are, as you indicated to us earlier, I want to refer you to page 27 of the Hansard report, Bundle A. I will start with the speaker, where the speaker called the Honorable Holomisa. Then there is interjection.
and down there, it's Honorable Ndlozi, while Honorable Olomisa was already being identified to speak by the speaker. And Honorable Z.S. Dlamini Dubazana interjected, but he was given a chance to speak before Honorable Holomisa. And on the same, Mr. Ndlozi, on a point of order also, was denied an opportunity to bear his point of order. Is that within the rules?
Mr. Kass.
Mr. Chairman, I will answer the question by the Honorable Member. But let me just say what I observed in the footage during this phase of the sitting. There was Honorable Dlamini Dubazana, I'll come back to that. Then it would appear that Honorable Ndlozi and Honorable Shivambo stood at the same time or asked for to be recognized, because here what you see is that speaker then says, what is your point of order, Honorable Shivambo? And if you look at the footage, at that point, Honorable Ndlozi sits down and Honorable Shivambo makes his point on page 28. Now, Honorable Member, as I said, Speaker presides over proceedings of the House. The rule says a member may not speak, may only speak when recognized by the presiding officer or on a point of order. That's what the rule says. So as to why Honorable Dubazana was recognized, I would not be able to say. But the point is that the rule says member may speak when called upon to do so by the presiding officer or to respond to a point of order. What I see here is that she then says, may I address you according to the House rule, a member of this House, if he or she is not at the podium, is not supposed to be interrupted. So dealing with the rules and all that stuff, procedure. But that would be my response to that.
Honorable Fintan.
Thank you, Chair. Also, through you, Chair. At the beginning of your giving evidence, you were indicated to us that you have been working Parliament is in Parliament for the last 20 years. And you also confirmed that indeed on board sessions were held at the beginning of this fifth Parliament. Now, time and again, you've referred to a book that I'm seeing for the first time. And you also even mentioned some two cases of the 90s, 1997, 1998. What I would like to know is, would you say that the onboard orientation process gave new MPs all the information in terms of rules, statutes, conventions, that guide them sufficiently for them to be able to know exactly how to conduct themselves inside the parliament precincts? Would you say they were given everything that they need to know? It says new parliament, fifth parliament, would you say they were? This is based on what you have said, that, and indeed, you know, I would agree with you that we're taken through orientation. Thank you.
Mr. Klaus.
Mr. Chairman, what I can indicate is that indeed the onboarding session did happen. I can also confirm that books like this were made available to the members. Yesterday I suggested that the rules may have been
made available to the members. It was confirmed to me later by my office that indeed the rules were made available to the members. I'm not qualified, Honorable Chair, or shall I say, I am not in a position, I would not be in a position to say members would have heard everything, especially things that I quoted, like the court judgments and everything else. But the rules, this book, and of course, I'm aware that the guide to procedure is available on the website as well. But I can also confirm that I interact, when I started my testimony yesterday, when I was giving context to why I thought I had been called to be here, I said that I work with all the members. My office works with all the members across the party. And I was saying that because I wanted this committee to bear that in mind, just in terms of my role and our role at the table. Now, the reason why I'm raising this is because on a regular basis, there are members who come to our offices, and sometimes they invite us to their offices to interact on issues of rules and practice and house business. And I'm talking different parties coming at different times, whether the house is sitting or the house is not sitting. And of course, we'll be available to assist them. I can also just say that training is an ongoing exercise. That is why I cannot say members got everything that in terms of, I said earlier on, members would not be expected to be experts. I don't consider myself an expert either. But that is what has, that is, those are the interventions that have happened up to now, Mr. Chair, in terms of interaction with members. But I do want to emphasize that we are always available to work with members, and we do that. And I think that is the understanding of members broadly, that is our role as a table. We are a table for the House as a whole. Thank you.
Next is Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. We appreciate the experience that you have in Parliament, and I think I have also seen the integrity with which the Speaker has been trying to protect Parliament. So my question would be, the Speaker say you must call security or amapoise. The Speaker want to call the securities or amapoise. But then the second question would be, in your own understanding with the disruption that happened on the day in question, do you think, in your own opinion, that these members understand the rules? Did they interact with the rules in a manner that can satisfy that such a behavior can happen in the House? Thanks, Chair. I'll come back later.
Mr. Goss.
Mr. Chairman, Hansard records what the Speaker said. The Speaker said, we'll call security. The Speaker did not say we'll call the security services. Now, that is all that is recorded in Hansard, that we'll call security. Now, subsequent to that, Speaker went to the House and gave context to what she said. I'm just talking about things that are recorded, that she was calling security, and you'll forgive me, Chair, because I don't have the actual text, so I'm not citing it verbatim. And I hope I will not be doing injustice to it. That she had called security for the purpose of them assisting the sergeant at arms. Now, in the answer, I also read where she says, our security is asking that we vacate the house. So I can, Mr. Honorable Bongo, I can only speak to what is written in Hansard. That is all that I can say. I, with your permission, Chair, unless I'm forced to, or I'm compelled to, you were asking, just to clarify the second question, whether, in my opinion, I think the members interact fully with the rules. Just a question of clarity, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I think that was the question, whether you believe, you think, in your opinion, whether the members have full knowledge of the rules.
Will those be members of the EFF or members general?
Those charged.
Mr. Chair, as I say, I would, with your permission, sir, unless you compel me, I would not wish to venture an opinion on that matter.
Okay, Honorable Ngongo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was actually still on the issue of the speaker calling upon the sergeant at arms to actually remove members who were not civil. I'm asking this in view of the fact that the issue at hand actually deals with members who were actually asking a legitimate question to the president during the session, which was actually meant to do so. Now, I just want to tap into the understanding of the rules by the Secretary of Parliament, whether in fact there is a list of offences. Yes, there are. Whether the issue of not being serious is actually part of that, that a member is will actually be charged out of the legislature if they are, if he or she is not serious. And that is why I was actually asking what actually is meant by not being serious. Because in your answer, the member in question actually retorted and said, but Madam Speaker, I'm very serious.
Mr. Gosh.
Honourable Chair, what I can only say, just to add on to what I said earlier, Honourable Mwambo asks whether there is a rule or a procedure for members who are not serious to be asked to leave. My response there, and I may not be able to respond to the specific points that the member is raising, but I will attempt, is that Rule 51, and this is a rule, this is the only rule, unless there's a rule I'm missing, that deals with members being ordered to withdraw. And of course, there is also a rule that deals with suspension or naming that leads to the withdrawal of members. But for the purpose of this, Rule 51 talks about member who is deliberately contravening a provision of these rules, or a member who is disregarding the authority of the chair, or a member's conduct which is regarded as grossly disorderly. The speaker may, or he or she may order the member to withdraw immediately from the chamber for the remainder of the sittings. So the issue would be around these rules. As I say, my understanding has to be based, I said earlier, there must be a rational basis in terms of why I understand, why I think that should be my understanding. This is the rule that deals with the withdrawal of members, or members being asked to withdraw, and a description or conduct that fits this description would then be the basis for a presiding officer asking a member to leave the house. And I might just add, Mr. Chair, that I cannot recall where instances where a member would be asked to leave for what they say necessarily. Members are asked to leave for what they say they are asked to withdraw. It is for disregarding the authority of the chair that they are asked to leave the house. And of course, these are the other circumstances, deliberate contravention of the provisions of the rules, deliberate, and contempt, as I said. I don't want to be too repetitive on these issues. And just in terms of supplementary questions, and I really need to apologize to members, because I am aware that not every member has got a hard copy of this book that I keep referring to, so I really apologize profusely for that. All I can say is that there are copies available on the website. But page 201 of this book, at the bottom, it says the chair decides whether the supplementary question is in order. This deals with quite supplementary questions. But as I understood the proceedings on that day, Honorable Chair, maybe not just as I understood it, but as I understand the procedure around questions, as prescribed by the rules, there are 4 supplementary questions. The chair takes those 4 supplementary questions in terms of both the list, but also exercising discretion. And in the event in question, the chair was in the course of recognizing the members who had indicated their intention or their wish to speak. And this happens in that context, when the next member was supposed to take the floor and ask the question, then the events kick in. So I just thought I should make that point. So it does not appear to me that the issue was even about the validity of the supplementary question. The issue was about the procedure that ought to be followed in the House when it comes to supplementary questions. I did not understand the issue to be about the substance of the statements that the members were making, but the issue was compliance with the rules at the time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We now call upon Honorable Mthabo.
Things there. What do you think he's he is referring to in that regard. Thank you.
Mr. Toss.
Mr. Chair, the context of this was Honorable Lamia Dubazana holding a rules book. And the statement says we've dealt with the issue of the rules. We have got that book as well. We know those things. I mean, the only logic, Mr. Chair, for me is that the reference would have been to the rules book. By reading the handset. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The next will be Honorable Boy.
This is 20 years of democracy. And the rules have been moving and changing. And as you have correctly said, that there were two incidents. And these are the third incidents. I just wanted to get more knowledge from you that in such circumstances, have you ever found members coming to your office to say to you, this afternoon will disrupt the house? And what are the rules that relate to that? Because you see, the matter here is about the rules and what happened on that particular day. Did you have an insider's information, or did you have any knowledge of how the house will end up on that particular day? Because from where we sit, it was not about the rules, but quite clearly there was lack of discipline and disregard of the rules on that particular day.
Mr. Klaus.
Well, Mr. Chairperson, I could not have known that the house would not conclude its scheduled business on the day. I didn't know.
The next one is Honorable Matsuku.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will refer you to this reliable document on page 33. Earlier, the issue of security was raised. The speaker raised that he said to honorable members, I'm calling security. I'm suspending the house for a few minutes for this honorable members to leave. In the video clips which we witnessed from yesterday to today, we saw the police officers inside the chamber. So you said our security. So did you include the police officers? Because you said not security services. But in the clips which were shown here, there were police inside the chamber. Can you clarify that?
Honorable Chair, firstly, let me just say, and this is important for me to clarify, when I was saying our security, I was basically quoting what the speaker said in answer at page 36, Honorable Member, where she says, Honorable Members, please take your seats. Our security is requesting us to cooperate with them. So I just thought I should make that point. And also just make the point that There are police on the premises of Parliament. At the entrances, in the hallways, and other places, generally. All I can say here, Honorable Chair, is to talk about what is recorded here and what the Speaker said in the House subsequently. And that's really all that I can say, that in this text, it is talking about security. Speaker, on a later occasion, says this was the context why I called security to be in the House. So that's the only answer I have, Mr. Honorable Motloko, on this issue. But I'm willing to, if the member wishes to pursue the point, to take the next point on this.
Can we have Honorable Fildane? Fildane.
Thank you for thanks for another opportunity to share. Yesterday, Mr. Paso was asked how much time is usually allocated for questions to the President. He indicated that it's 2 hours. And then the subsequent question was put to him by the initiator as to whether that is normally sufficient. And he said 2 hours has never been insufficient. Now, my question is, given that there were no less than 2-3 breaks that were ordered by the Speaker on the day in question, in particular the last one was quite long, when members came back to the House, there was absolute lull. There was not even a trace of disorderliness in any description of the word. Why, in your opinion, and together with your experience, did the Speaker decide to call off the day, if I may use that statement? I know that at that time, 2 hours had expired from 10 past 2. It was shortly after 4. 2 hours had expired. But given that the President only comes into the House with the limited opportunity for members to ask questions and even follow-up questions, why, when there was so much love, did the Speaker call off the day? Would there have been any harm if the President had been given an opportunity to proceed and listen, to see if, give members an opportunity to put questions to him? Thank you.
May I proceed, Mr. Klaus?
Honorable Chairman, And members will forgive me for keep doing this, but I think it is the most responsible thing for me to do. That I would not want to make assumptions. The Speaker made the statement in the House that, this is on page 37, that we would like to give feedback on the outcome of consultations, and we all know what has happened. Clearly, there were consultations at that time, and I do know that there had also been consultations among whips. Of course, I was not privy to those consultations. I did not attend the meeting of the whips, so I don't know what would have occurred there. And therefore, after these consultations, the decision was taken that the House would adjourn. The decision was taken by the Speaker that the House would adjourn. But also, I think it is necessary to just remember why the House was suspended in the first instance. That the House had been suspended because Speaker had asked certain members to leave the chamber. And it did not appear, at that time at least, that the members who had been asked to leave the chamber had left the chamber. So I think that context is also important to bear in mind, but I can only confine myself, Honorable Chairperson, to the statement that the speaker made in the House on that day, just shortly before the House was adjourned for the day. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. I think the next is Honorable Killian.
I just find it a little difficult because sometimes we have covered an issue and it would have been nice to intervene at that specific point and then we've moved on and then it is rather difficult to go back to a point. So I just wanted to ask your indulgence that when a matter is on, you know, is under scrutiny, if we could perhaps have, you know, allow supplementary questions on a particular issue. Now that I'm coming to this point, I just want to first ask Mr. Kasu, could he perhaps just remind us where the speaker derives the authority from, as well as other presiding officers, and also not only the authority, but also the responsibility for the order. And if he could just refer us again to the court case that we made mention of yesterday, and if we could have a copy of that to just understand better what the court has ruled in terms of the rules and the authority of presiding officers. Secondly, Chairperson, what his understanding is of Parliament, which he said yesterday was a creature of statute, and the oath of office that members sign to undertake allegiance to the Constitution and consequently also obviously to the rules. What are his views as far as that is concerned? In other words, when you sign an oath of office, do you also sign because it's the primary base for the rules, the Constitution? If you sign an oath of office to the Constitution, do you also actually sign an oath of office to the rules? And then thirdly, Chairperson, if you could please explain.
I hope that he is writing because now a long lead and he tries to refer to a document and not take notes. I just hope that he has captured all of them.
Could I just ask you one additional question, and that is, members of the EFF seem to have been unhappy with the reply, the response of the President. Now, can you please explain what, going through the hands up, it's obvious, the President replied to the second question, maybe not to the satisfaction. What is the recourse of a member, and what is the practice in all parliaments when the reply is not well received by the member who posed the question? What would the practice be? Thank you.
Okay. You got all of them?
Yes, I did.
Three of them.
I actually have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
Or even 5.
Okay. So you better than me proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Speaker is elected by the House, by the members of the House, in terms of the Constitution. If one reads books on parliamentary procedure, and even our courts have cited this, that the Speaker of the House is the custodian and guardian of the privileges of the members. Now, these are members individually and members collectively. In other words, the Speaker has a responsibility to ensure that those privileges are protected, both of the individual members but also of the collective, and that the House is able to do what it is meant to do. I cited the court case, and there would have been others, but I cited one, which was the correct citation, would be the matter between Honorable Lekota and the Speaker as first respondent, and Deputy Speaker as second respondent, and Congress of the People as second applicant. And the judge was Judge Foley. Judgment was delivered on the 11th of December 2012. And I cited paragraph 31. And the matter here, Honorable Chair, with your indulgence, concerned a remarks that were made in the House, and I think the Deputy Speaker was in the chair, gave a considered ruling on a later occasion, and the ruling was that the member should withdraw the remarks. The member did not withdraw the remarks, and the Deputy Speaker directed the member to withdraw from the House in terms of Rule 51. And the member took the matter to court, in essence that, of course I don't want to quote it incorrectly, but the issue was whether the Deputy Speaker acted correctly in asking the member to leave the chamber, and also issues of freedom of speech and that. And among other things, in giving the judgment and in dismissing the case, the judge said in paragraph 31, as explained earlier, second respondent, the Speaker, has a duty to maintain order during debates of the National Assembly. To this end, she has to apply the applicable rules and standing orders of the National Assembly. Then paragraph 44 says, finally, in this regard, I wish to emphasize that the task of controlling debates in Parliament requires particular skills and is best dealt with by the presiding officers who are appointed for this purpose and have to do it on a daily basis. Then paragraph 45, the indulgence just says, this brings me to the sanction imposed by second respondent. National Assembly Rule 51 expressly provides that where a member disregards the authority of the chair, he or she may be ordered to withdraw from the chamber for the remainder of the day's sittings. I agree with the submission made on behalf of the respondents that the refusal of a member to withdraw a remark which the Speaker has ruled out of order certainly constitutes a serious disregard of the authority of the Speaker. We've been referred to a number of precedents where similar sanction was imposed in circumstances where members refused to abide the ruling of the Speaker to withdraw unpermitted remarks. In fact, the usual sanction in such event appears to be an order to withdraw from the chamber. I believe that the sanction imposed cannot be described as unreasonable. On the contrary, I believe that this usual sanction for such conduct was justified. That's not the case. Honorable Chairman, in terms of the oath of office, all I wish to say to this committee is that the oath speaks for itself. And I don't wish to venture an opinion in terms of how members should view it. But it is provided for in the Constitution. It's about upholding the law and the Constitution. In regard to when members are unhappy with the reply, firstly, there have been rulings to the effect that it is not for the presiding officers to dictate the nature of responses that are given in the House. But also, I think the initiator yesterday, I indicated that the other avenues that members could utilize would obviously be questions for written reply. If the question meets the requirements of the rules and practice, but there would also be, other opportunities like time for motions and time for statements. And I did indicate that generally statements are directed at ministers. So that is what happens in terms of the issue of replies when there's unhappiness with the reply. Of course, a supplementary question is, because remember when a supplementary question is asked, it is after a reply has been given. The initial reply is given, and then the supplementary question follows to the question. I think, Chair, the issue of the request was in respect of issue of questions. I think I've covered the questions. Thank you.
I'm not sure the question of oath, it has been responded to. Thank you very much. It is now time for Honorable Bongo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The inner examination in chief, you referred to Rule 52 and Rule 53. So my question would be, if you can just take us through all these two rules in context, because in terms of these rules, if somebody says it's a practice or a convention in Parliament that if a speaker orders somebody to go out, the speaker must name that person. Can you just take us through under what circumstances will the speaker do that, and the what will be the difference if it's not the speaker, maybe the presiding officer? Just take us through that in context so that we understand exactly.
So, Chairman, I recall clearly that I actually came back to this rule yesterday because I was trying to clarify a point, and I need to state the context, because the point I was trying to make was just to explain the notion of naming a member in terms of this rule. It was not my intention to suggest that a presiding officer should not indicate a member by name, but the naming of a member is a, for lack of a better way of putting it, is a procedure that is followed in Parliament. It's a distinct procedure. Now, if you read Rule 52, Rule 52 creates two scenarios. The one scenario, you have the Speaker in the chair presiding. A transgression is committed. In the view of the Speaker, an order to withdraw in terms of Rule 51 is inadequate. Then this rule empowers the speaker in terms of paragraph A. If this person in the chair is the speaker, to suspend the member immediately. And of course, Rule 54 says for the first transgression, 5 days, second one, 10 days, subsequent 20 days. Now, B says, if it happens to be another presiding officer, and is not the speaker, transgression is committed, order to withdraw is viewed to be inadequate, that presiding officer then names the member. It would be honorable member. Of course, during the times when members were presiding in constituencies, honorable member of this constituency, but honorable member so-and-so, I name you Now, the issue here is that only the speaker can suspend immediately in the chair in terms of this rule. Now, once this other presiding officer does this, then the other presiding officer must report the matter to the speaker. It says, then the speaker may take such action as he or she deems necessary. And then Rule 51.3.1 says, a member ordered to withdraw must withdraw immediately from the chamber, or a member named must withdraw immediately. But the difference here is that the speaker, after consultation with his presiding officer, may take such action as he or she deems necessary. It does not prescribe the action. And I did make the point that elsewhere, where this rule applies, the member will be named and by the speaker. Elsewhere, the speaker has the power to name the House of Commons. And when the member is named, and of course even there is a severe way of punishment, severe sanction than just withdrawing. Where that member is named, then it is followed, according to what I've read, by a motion for the suspension of that member from the House. So I thought I should just make that point, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the question so that I could clarify the procedure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then we go to Honorable Mwango.
Thank you, Nyabo. Thank you so much. I would like to go back to the issue of the training on the orientation of new members on their roles, because the members that we are discussing about here, they have actually been members for not more than 5 months, 4.5 months to be precise. And as you know as much as I do, that people like myself have been here for 20 years. And there are other members who are here in this parliament who have been around here for more than 10 years or for more than 5 years. But you yourself admitted yesterday in your evidence that you cannot actually vouch that there is any member who can claim to be an authority on the rules, because it's always a learning curve. We are all always on the learning curve. Every time a new session actually begins, it always starts with the orientation of members on the rules, irrespective of whether they've been here for 10 or 20 years. In your view, would you actually say that 4 months and 20 days would be adequate for new members to actually have mastered the rules of power? That's my first question. The second one has to do with the call by the speaker for members to vacate the house. I also wanted to ask, in your view, why did the speaker not name the members by name, given the fact that the EFF is represented in the National Assembly by 25 members, and they all sit together? Now, for the speaker to say, leave the house, who was he referring to specifically out of 25 members? That's my second question. I'm asking that because in the history of this parliament since 1994, I probably am the first member of parliament who actually was ordered to leave the house by the speaker. And the speaker at the time actually named me, called me by name, and said, Honorable Member so-and-so, leave the house. And then I fully understood that the speaker was talking to me, and I left the house. So in this particular case, there are 25 members seated together, all wanting the attention of the speaker, and the speaker's response is that, leave the house. Who should leave the house? Why should 20 leave? Why not 25 leave? In clip number 9, well, for lack of better identification of this clip, I think I heard in the background, immediately after the speaker had asked the sergeant at arms to get those members out of there. This time around, she did not say members. She said those anarchists. Would that be still, you know, parliamentary and actually within the decorum of the House and also within the powers of the Speaker to say that? My last question also is has to do with the issue of grave discord in terms of Rule 56. What would have actually led the Speaker to declare that what was happening at that particular moment was in fact an event of grave disorder? I'm asking this because, as you know, together with you, we've been here for 20 years, we actually have witnessed chanting of slogans in that very house. We have actually witnessed together outbursts of freedom songs in that particular house. But the two of us in this committee have never actually heard the speaker declaring those occasions as occasions of grave disorder that warranted actually some hearings against members involved in those issues. I would like to be educated exactly what actually this particular time prompted the speaker to actually think that what happened on that day, only on that day, and I'm talking about a speaker who also was part of what I'm actually talking about, and she knows it. And not only the outburst of songs and chanting of slogans, you and I have at some occasion witnessed an interesting boxing match in that parliament where one member actually, with a stinging uppercut, actually floored a member.
Honorable Mwango.
Mr. Chairman, can I be given an opportunity?
Honorable Mwango. I think that you must simply just withdraw, just making a speech, and just ask the questions so that you can be able to respond.
Under what rules, Mr. Chairman, I say? I have not transgressed any rules. I'm making my point and myself clear so that I get a clearer answer from the member. The trend of thought now has actually been interfered with. So I was actually asking whether exactly what prompted the speaker. I know you were not presiding on that day, but perhaps your experience will help us to understand what was actually happening there. Why suddenly a grave disorder on this particular one, not with the previous one?
Just before Mr. Kassos speaks, honorable members, when you have an opportunity to pose a question, it is not the last opportunity. It is not the last opportunity. I think we have up to 5 o'clock, at least. And you'll have an opportunity to raise the question. So that why I'm saying that is that we must not field a lot of questions that Mr. Kassos end up worrying about scribing the questions rather than thinking about your response to the question and give you the adequate response, and then you come back to ask another question. If at 5 o'clock members feel that you can stay here beyond 5 o'clock, we'll do so, so that you actually exhaust the particular question that you want to make. But if you can give a pointed question, just one question, but if it's got a related one, it's fine. But if there are different, separate them, you have an opportunity to raise all of them, even if they are 10 or 20. And then, so that it doesn't worry about scribing the questions and make sure that it doesn't forget them and forget about your answers. Thank you, honorable members. Mr. Kasu, you can proceed.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much. If I may just begin with the last point that the honorable Mango has made about what he referred to as a boxing match. I think let me just say what happened in that instance. The matter happened after adjournment. So the House had adjourned on the day. And I'm raising this because I want to indicate that even though the House had adjourned, and this happened outside of proceedings, because of the seriousness of the matter and on the image of Parliament, it was brought back into the House later. And in that instance, sanctions were imposed. I mean, as I said, it was after proceedings. Sanctions were imposed on the members concerned. The members apologized in terms of the minutes of proceedings. And in respect of one member, the member was suspended for a day, and the other member was suspended for 5 days. The other occurrence would be the one that would have been in September 1998, where I said there would have been a group of young people, not on the floor of the House, but in the gallery. In other words, they did not interfere with what was on the floor of the House. But the Speaker at the time made a determination that this was grave disorder, and the House was suspended. Because the Speaker could have just asked the security to take care of the situation. The House was suspended so that the situation could be contained due to grave disorder. Sir, I did not read or hear the remark about those anarchists, I must say. But of course, I am willing to be made to listen to it. At the point the Speaker suspends proceedings, you have about 10 members on their feet. And remember, this is it appears, if you watch the video, to be a build-up. At that point, you have about 10 members on their feet, some of whom seem to be addressing the chair, either through the mic or on their own, facing the direction of the Speaker. And other members are involved in a different activity, banging the heads on the desks. I'm sure there would always be a debate. At what point does the Speaker make the call that this is grave disorder, or it is not grave disorder? Court judgment says, or the court, not the finding, but statement of the judge, say that the presiding office speaker has a duty to preside over proceedings, and they are best placed to make that determination in terms of what should happen when, of course, guided by the occurrences. And I also just wanted to read just one paragraph that talks about unparliamentary expressions just to give a bit of context, where it says, in deciding whether an expression is unparliamentary, the chair takes into account the tone, manner, the intention of the member speaking, the person to whom the expression is directed. I think here it means if it's directed to a member of the public, it will not apply. But if it's to a member, the degree of provocation, and whether or not the remarks created disorder in the chamber, as well as the context in which the expression was made. So, speaker would take into account what the House is busy with and whether the House is able to proceed with business at that point or not. Speaker had made a call to ask members to leave, and I'm coming to your other point, honourable member. And in speaker's determination, members were not leaving. And as I said, all that I can make of that is that in speaker's determination, the conduct that was unfolding in the House fitted the description in Rule 51. And speaker makes the call. It is my understanding, Honorable Mungo and Honorable Members, that my understanding that speaker could only have been, let me not say could only have been, but it was my understanding that speaker in that event applied Rule 51, and Rule 51 gives instances where this rule can be applied. And at that time, as I said, you had certain members standing, certain members addressing the speaker, attempting to address the House and to address the members. And it did not appear that speaker was getting through in terms of the members allowing the speaker or listening to the speaker without interruption, as Rule 49 dictates. So then the speaker made a call. So my understanding is that speaker was referring to the members who were involved in that activity at the time. And the members I saw, there were 14 members. And then on the issue of 12 members, sorry, on the issue of training, 4.5 months mastering of the rules. Honorable Chair, As I say, mastering of the rules, working knowledge of the rules, basic understanding of the rules, so it's different levels. I mean, as I sit here, I cannot claim to be a master of the rules. I still listen to people who are better able in terms of their understanding of the rules than me, and I listen to them with interest, including members of Parliament. So, 4.5 months in terms of mastering would definitely not be enough. In terms of a basic understanding of the rules, maybe. And hence, there is continuous training on the matter of the rules to enable members to understand the rules, at least have a working knowledge of the rules. Call for members to name. Why did speaker not call the members by name? As I said, sir, my understanding, I can only say that where you would have had, I mean, where you have had a number of members standing or members on their feet, look, I've never been a presiding officer, I've not been a speaker, I've chaired small committees, not in this format, but it would appear to me that on that day, because you would have had so many members on their feet, speaker did not call them by name, and that's all I can say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I've responded to the questions, but I'm willing to take follow-ups on that. Chanting of songs and slogans. I'm trying hard to remember, Mr. I know that there's been what you call this, Taribunga. And there may have been other instances, and I also know that there's been time when this happened, and to what extent it interfered, let me not say it interfered, to what extent it may have led to delays in the processing of business by the House, I cannot recall, but I'm willing to be reminded of those instances and the nature of those instances. Thank you.
Honorable members, on the list that I'm having now, I'm having Honorable Boy, Honorable Filtain, Honorable Mdagane, and Honorable Matoko, who were supposed to be speaking. And it looks like Honorable Killian wants to join the party. And among the people that want to speak now, Honorable Mdagane has not asked a question up to now. But I was having an opinion that we need to break for tea because tea has been made available for us to be able to come back. Can I offer Honorable Mdagane to pose that one question after it will break for tea? Then when you come, we go through this list as and those that would want to speak, then will append the name. Can I do so? Thank you for your understanding. Thank you.
I want us to raise a few questions, especially because one of them is their task. We have been part and parcel of this democratic parliament since 1994. The evolution of the rules of the presidencies, we have been part of. Am I correct, Mr. Tasso, that the programming committee that took a decision on the agenda or the order paper on the 21st of August 2014, that all parties were present at the meeting, therefore they took a decision what would happen on the 21st of August 2014. And then, but also, because we've been here, we've coming and going. What is your understanding of the role of the Whips in the House or in the Chamber? And also the leader of parties in the House. I'm not talking about leading political organization outside, I'm talking about the House. What has been your experience of that? And then the last question that I wanted us to put, and then I'm trying just to look at the rules. I can't find a rule that prescribes how the president should answer the oral question. I'm saying that the answer really, not necessarily the format, the oral question. At what stage should a member say, no, I'm satisfied with your answer? And because that to me is a bigger issue that I think we must address. But for me, just to understand your understanding of this, because I think there's no rule that's prescribed on how the president must answer the question. It depends entirely, I guess, on the answerer of the question, on how he or she phrases the question. And that's an issue that I wanted your experience on that. And then I do have other five questions, but because the chair wants us to. I think I will
deserve it. Mr. Gasso.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Indeed, I have witnessed some evolution of rules and practices, and I'm eternally grateful for the opportunity to have been part of this process. Honorable Chair, let me start with the whips. Page 25 of the Guide to Procedure reads as follows. I'll read it for the members. Whips are party political functionaries. The term whip is derived from the fox hunting term quipain, someone who kept the hounds from straying from the pack. In modern parliamentary terminology, a whip is a member designated by his or her party to assist in the smooth running of the party and the functioning of the house. And then it lists out various things. Yes. Now, my understanding of the role of the whips is obviously to organize party business, but also generally it has been my experience that whips would be the ones who raise points of order in the house when they occur. And of course whips sit on many committees, like your chief whips forum, which is there to deal among others with inter-party cooperation and ensuring that issues that pertain to the house are handled at that level. They would sit in the rules committee that deals with the rules of the house, and of course they sit in the program committee, so they would participate in the decision of the program committee. So the really whips are there to provide that function and to provide guidance and leadership, and also there are administrative support, as I understand it, administrative functions that whips operate or perform, sorry, within their own parties. And I would imagine that the leader of parties functions are not prescribed, and I cannot claim to know why how parties internally conduct their businesses. I am not privy to that, but they are leaders, and I mean the term itself suggests that they provide leadership to the parties. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I understood the question correctly, but if I understand the question, it's about the nature of replies by the President and where that is prescribed. The rules deal generally with the procedure, the format of questions, form, and how the question session should be handled, and the submission of questions. And as I intimated earlier, there's been rulings to the effect that the presiding officers cannot firstly pronounce on the correctness or otherwise of statements that are made in the House, either by ministers or by other parties. So where a member would have queried in the form of a point of order a statement made in the House, the presiding officer would have said, look, it's not for the chair to ascertain the correctness or otherwise of a statement. Similarly, in the set of questions, there have been rulings to the effect that chairpersons, presiding officers cannot dictate the nature of reply that a minister or a member of the administration should give to the House. So it is not prescribed anywhere. And of course, some of these things, Mr. Chairman, are for structures such as the Rules Committee to grapple with. Should there be guidelines? There are practices just in terms of that a question must respond to the points raised in the question. But the actual substance of the question, the unkind mind, in that respect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Honorable members, as raised before, I would like us to suspend the proceedings now to have some tea and come back at 4:15 and continue with the hearing.